Valley Free Radio, Northampton.
That's great. It starts with an earthquake. Birds and snakes and airplane. Lenny Bruce is not afraid. I have a hurricane. Listen to yourself. Turn world serve its own needs. Dummy serve your own needs. Feed it off an ox. Speed grunt. No strength. The ladder starts to clatter with fear. Fight down. High wire and a fire. Representative seven games in a government for hire. Slice and burn, return, listen to yourself churn. Locking in, uniform and book burning, blood letting every motive escalate. Automotive centerate, light a candle, light a motive, step down, step down. Watching heel crush, crush, uh-oh, this means no fear. Cavalier, renegade, steer clear, a tournament of lies. Offer me solutions, offer me alternatives, and I decline. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world.
Greetings, Earthlings. It's the Winter Solstice Enviro Show. I'm one of your co-hosts, Dio. I'm here with...
Glenn Ayers.
And hopefully Jean's on her way.
She's, I think her broom is in the air somewhere, so...
You know, she's going to the Amazon in February, I think.
On her broom?
You'll have to ask her. We celebrate... what?
Going to the Amazon.
Yep. We celebrate the return of the sun this past Sunday with Cassie and Winifred of the Awen Tree in East Hampton. No, it's not the manifestation of Bill O'Reilly's war against Christmas, but hey, let's talk about the Christian war against the pagans while we're at it. Speaking of war, we'll check out the infamous warmonger Darth Janey and his target practice dummy. By the way, don't throw shoes at your radio. As always, we'll peek into the Enviro Show Echo Chamber for the news of the day and give you the quote of the week. But first, it's time for... Re- Revenge of the Critters, the special holiday version, Santa Attacked by Bobcat in, are you ready, Glenn? Jersey.
Oh, nice. I'm on my way there tomorrow.
Okay. Benny is half house cat and half bobcat. The Kringle-phobic cat bit Santa, a.k.a. Jonathan Bebbington, at a charity event in Hamilton Township, New Jersey. And he was about to get rabies shots when the cat's owner, Christine Hawley, appeared with vaccination records. Made it back in nice on the nice list she did for that. Benny, however, is toast this Christmas. The large cat apparently went naughty, to use the North Pole vernacular, when he spotted dogs visiting Santa at the nearby Santa Paws event. It then became Benny versus Bebbington in a throwdown in Jersey. Bebbington got his ho-ho-ho handed to him, apparently. I didn't write this, by the way. It would make for an interesting tort case. A domesticated animal does get one free bite unless the owner had knowledge of his vicious propensity. Of course, Santa, as a client, can be challenging when he is used to contingency contracts for people who remain nice. He is known to disappear for most of the year and runs a suspected sweatshop at the North Pole with undocumented elves. It may be better to simply have Dasher and Vixen visit Benny in Jersey and send an Xmas message. All right.
Oh, gee.
Time to move on. What do you know what time it is?
What time is it?
It's time to hear the Darth Chain. Wow.
Hey, we're going to be able to retire this theme song pretty soon.
I hope so. But you never know. Glenn, how much longer?
Oh, you know, it still is too long. It's 27 days, 17 hours, 22 minutes, and 10 seconds at the buzzer.
3, 2, 1.
Until what?
Until what? Wait a minute. What did you say on the ride over? He was going to...
I think this is my prediction. Bush is going to pardon Cheney, and then he's going to resign, you know, right at the last minute. That way Cheney becomes president, which he's, you know, obviously been all these 8 years, but officially he'll be number 44, and then he'll be able to pardon Bush while he's president, and they'll all be out. So that's my prediction. We'll see.
We'll see.
Yeah. It makes sense.
Anyway.
You know, they got to pardon Rove and everybody else.
Most of us are looking forward to the end of the Bush era.
It couldn't come soon enough.
All right. See what kind of naughtiness these guys are up to. December 11th. This is from Defenders of Wildlife. Bush administration finalizes rule blocks crucial polar bear protections. Rule refuses to tackle global warming implications, ignores science and common sense. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service announced today, well, this was December 11th, that it will deny the polar bear the appropriate and necessary protections of the Endangered Species Act. Quote, this rule makes a mockery of the Endangered Species Act, our nation's most important wildlife protection law, said Defenders of Wildlife Executive Vice President Jamie Rappaport Clark. The polar bear doesn't have time for political maneuvers. Its habitat is melting away. Its food is becoming scarce, and the science is clear, and the cause is global warming. Yet the rule this administration released today affirms that little will be done to save the species from sure extinction, close quote. Defenders of Wildlife has already filed suit in federal court contesting the legality of a previous interim final version of this rule and will challenge this new final rule as well as to ensure that the polar bear, which was listed as threatened under the ESA in May of 2008, receives the full protections that other species receive under the ESA. Listing polar bears as threatened should keep polar bear habitat from threats such as oil and gas development, which the Bush administration is aggressively pursuing in the Chukchi Sea north of Alaska, and has even proposed that the pristine Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, which provides the primary land denning habitat for the species. Instead, the administration has made it clear with its 4D rule that the ESA will not provide any additional protections for these and other harmful activities than those that already exist under the Marine Mammal Protection Act, and will provide no protection whatsoever against emissions of greenhouse gases that are causing the rise in global temperatures that directly threaten the polar bear. Specifically,
wait, hey, I thought all that global warming stuff was a hoax.
Specifically, the 4D rule eliminates some of the necessary protections for the polar bear and its habitat under the ESA based on the incorrect assertion that the polar bear is already adequately protected under other laws such as the MMPA. Furthermore, the rule states that the ESA's protections against incidental take, death or harm to polar bears caused by human activities such as oil and gas development, do not apply at all if those activities occur outside of Alaska. Quote, it's not really surprising that the Bush administration, with its long-standing resistance to taking any responsible action against global warming, would think of a stunt like this in its waning days in office, said Clark. To finally admit that the science compels the listing of the polar bear as threatened due to global warming, but then deny it the protections of the Endangered Species Act should provide, is nothing other than irresponsible and shameful. Do you want some history?
I'd say it's more than that, but that's putting it mildly.
Do you want some background on the polar bear, or should we move on?
We should move on.
Okay.
We got a full show. We got a studio full of pagans.
We do.
Yeah.
Do, and we have a virtual bonfire somewhere.
Somewhere.
All right. Well, and that's the case. Do you want to hear a song, speaking of the Bush administration?
Yeah.
This is All I Want for Christmas is to Impeach the President. I heard this on the Tom Hartman show. Who's the?
Richard Franklin.
Richard Franklin.
All right. Here we go.
Check it out.
All I want for Christmas is a brand new. Let's dump the washed up terrorists that stole our government. They've screwed up the environment and the economy. From sea to shining sea. All I want for Christmas is a brand new president. The last 8 years have left us deep in bovine excrement. We're up to here with hate and fear and demagoguery. From sea to shining sea. Remember when we used to be the land of freedom and prosperity. All I want for Christmas is a brand new president. Cause eight this and I'll be living in a tent. So Santa, hear your huddled masses yearning to be free from right-wing tyranny. From sea to shining sea.
All right.
Yeah, that put me in the spirit.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. Nice.
Season's greetings, everyone. Happy solstice. In the Enviro Show Echo Chamber, moving on, there's good news to report. Good news.
Good news is,
finally,
yeah.
Three dams are...
That's the first time this year, isn't it?
Yes. Oh, no, we had one the other day. The good news is from American Rivers. After years of negotiations with American Rivers, Pacificorp has announced that it will remove four dams on the Klamath to restore imperiled salmon and steelhead runs. Removal of the dams is part of a broader agreement to restore the river and revive the basin's fishing, farming, and tribal communities. When these dams come down, it will be the biggest dam removal and river restoration effort the world has ever seen. Please thank these guys. Pacific Corp. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Nice touch. The Klamath, flowing through Oregon, California, was once the third most productive salmon fishery on the West Coast. Removing the four dams and restoring the river will boost ailing salmon runs by reopening access to over 300 miles of habitat and eliminating water quality problems caused by the reservoirs. By removing the dams and replacing their normal power generation with renewables and efficiency measures, PacifiCorp is making a responsible decision and will save its customers millions of dollars. All right. So contact them.
Yeah.
Tell them good work, guys.
Yeah, way to go.
Finally, responsible corporations. Now, this from Greenpeace, not so good news. This is about the Amazon. It's where Jean's going. That's why I wish she was here tonight. She could talk about her trip. This from Greenpeace. While much of the Amazon rainforest falls within the borders of Brazil, it also reaches into regions of Guyana, Venezuela, Colombia, Suriname, French Guiana, Ecuador, Peru, and Bolivia. The largest remaining tropical forest in the world, the Amazon rainforest is as large as Western Europe or the whole of the U.S. It actually covers 5% of the world's land and extends over some 6.5 million square kilometers. It is thought to be the most diverse ecosystem on Earth. It's home to nearly 10% of the world's mammals and a staggering 15% of the world's known land-based plant species. This is plant species, and that's not my fault.
That's a typo.
With as many as 300 species of tree in a single hectare. The Amazon in Brazil alone is also home to more than 20 million people, including an estimated 220,000 people from 180 different indigenous nations. These people rely on this ancient forest for their way of life. It provides almost everything from food and shelter to tools and medicines, as well as playing a critical role in people's spiritual and cultural life. It also plays a vital role keeping the world's climate stable, the lungs of the earth. All this is threatened by deforestation, fueled by a demand for cheap supplies of plywood, tropical timber locally and abroad, or the agricultural invasion to grow commodities such as soy, mainly used to feed animals in European countries. Between 60% and 80% of all logging in the Brazilian Amazon is estimated to be illegal, and more than 1 million hectares within the Amazon forest are already being used to grow soy. The Amazon forest is not only one of the richest and most biologically diverse regions on the planet, it's also one of the most threatened. But there's a good news in the New York Times.
More good news?
Yes. And this is on that very issue. Then this was yesterday's Times. Apparently, the government of Lula, President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, introduced ambitious targets for reducing deforestation and carbon dioxide emissions in a nation that is one of the world's top emitters of this heat-trapping gas. The plan promises to make Brazil a more influential player in global climate change decisions, helping to push the United States and other European Union to agree to emissions cuts and head off the adverse effects of climate change. But some environmentalists question whether the new targets, which would reduce Brazilian deforestation by 72% by 2017, are achievable in a country that has shown few signs of adjusting its development model as a major food provider to the world, especially in the midst of a global economic crisis. So, yes or no?
We'll decide. All right. You ready for tune?
Let's see. Are we? Yeah. Is that the end of the echo chamber?
That's it.
We were going to talk about other good things. We had more good news, like Obama's NOAA pick and his White House science advisor. You don't want to do that? You're tired of good news?
Yeah. I can't stand too much good news.
And then we were going to do the quote of the week.
It bums me out.
We were going to do the quote of the week.
Wait, let me get the here, ready? Better stop me. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. All right, that's the theme for the quote of the week. What's that sound?
Okay. Look what's going on. Quote of the week comes from Jonathan Swift. We have just enough religion to make us hate, but not enough to make us love one another. Now, that's very
profound,
appropriate
for
what we're talking about tonight, the pagans and the Christians.
Right on the theme.
And we're going to quote ourselves tonight, right? Right?
Yeah, we'll come to that later.
Oh, later?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought we were going to do it right after the quote of the week.
No, because we're running on here.
Well, all right.
Come on. We got to get to our guests. So we got to
just take the show and run with it.
We got to tune. Let me see if we can get this tune going here.
Okay. This would be Dar Williams.
Amber culture uncle. We're up here for the holiday. Jane and Deb are having solstice. Now we need a place to stay. And her Christ-loving uncle watched his wife hang Mary on a tree. He watched his son hang candy canes all made with red dye number three. He told his niece, it's Christmas Eve. I know our life is not your style. She said, Christmas is like solstice, and we miss you, and it's been a while. So the Christians and the pagans sat together at the table, finding faith and common ground the best that they were able. And just before the meal was served, hands were held and prayers were said, sending hope for peace on earth to all their gods and goddesses. The food was great, the tree plugged in, the meal had gone without a hitch, till Timmy turned to Amber and said, is it true that you're a witch? His mom jumped up and said, the pies are burning, and she hit the kitchen. And it was Jane who spoke, she said, it's true, your cousin's not a Christian. But we love trees, we love the snow, the friends we have, the world we share. And you find magic from your God, and we find magic everywhere. So the Christians and the pagans sat together at the table, finding faith and a common ground, the best that they were able. And where does magic come from? I think magic's in the learning. Cause now when Christians sit with pagans, only pumpkin pies are burning. When Amber tried to do the dishes, her aunt said, really, no, don't bother. Amber's uncle saw how Amber looked like Tim and like her father. He thought about his brother, how they hadn't spoken in a year. He thought he'd call him up and say, it's Christmas and your daughter's here. He thought of father's sons and brothers, saw his own son tug his sleeve, saying, can I be a pagan? Dad said, we'll discuss it when they leave. So the Christians and the pagans sat together at the table, finding faith and common ground, the best that they were able. Lighting trees in darkness, learning new ways from the old, and making sense of history and drawing warmth out of the cold.
And that, of course, was our own Dar Williams.
Yes, indeed.
Yes.
And we're privileged to have with us Cassie.
An Enviro Show exclusive.
And Winifred of Owen Tree. Welcome.
Hello. Hi.
Hi. So,
speak right into the mics when you talk.
Yeah. So what, for listeners that aren't aware of what the winter solstice means and how far back it goes and what it means to pagans, would you like to tell them?
Sure.
Go
ahead. One split. All right. Well, it's a very ancient tradition. Going back thousands of years, really, you can look back through many cultures and see that they all celebrate the return of the light. And one of the things that happens at this time of year, the winter solstice, that's pretty in modern times, pretty well known, occurs on or about December 21st. And in Latin, it means when the sun stands still for about 6 days on the horizon, the sun actually appears to stand still. Mm. And all many cultures in Eastern Europe, Egyptian, Middle Eastern,
the Jewish
recognized and acknowledged their agricultural culture, so it was really important to mark the year, the wheel of the year and the calendar.
Mm. So let me think. One thing that comes to mind.
What's with the Yule log thing?
You want to jump to the Yule log?
Jump to the Yule.
Wait, before we get jump to the Yule log, yeah. One of the things that, if you look at the whole solar year, it's frequently framed in two halves. You have what's considered the light half of the year and the dark half of the year. And the two
we're always stuck in the dark half. But anyway, are we going towards the light now?
Yes, well, we are.
Yes. Excellent. Yes. All right.
What the solstice is if you're going from the darkest half of the year to light, to going into the light half. The solstice is the darkest time of the year.
So the winter solstice marks the shortest day, the longest night, and the summer solstice occurring in June marks the longest day and the shortest night, and that's when the two halves of the year are switching.
So this is appropriate for a transition time, yes?
Yes, it is.
Correct.
Because we are definitely feeling like we want to transition into something a little lighter than we've had.
Right. And one of the things that's probably hard for a lot of modern people to be aware of, if you went back this time of year, while it's considered the first day of winter, really we're in the heart of winter, especially if you were in an Eastern or Northern culture like Norway, or a lot of people refer to Yule log, which is a Norse tradition, or right. Brittany or Ireland. And think back before modern conveniences when you couldn't have flipped the switch and had heat. You couldn't have gone to the store for food. So all your food, all your fuel had to be gathered during the summer. And now you come into winter and it's cold, it's dark.
You're running out.
Right. And people are getting sick and people wouldn't make it through the winter. And so marking this time, it brings the promise of spring. So it becomes really important to know that that time is coming, that this too shall pass and the wheel turns. And that. Right. So what they celebrated was return of the light. And you can see it in many cultures, from Hanukkah to
The candles.
Candles.
The oil that
Yule
never
logs.
Fails.
Yeah.
Even the Egyptians and the Norse, the Germanic tribes, the Celts.
Right. The Celts and a lot of the Norse people had they do bonfires?
Yep, they did bonfires. They did purification rituals even for their horses, their cattle, their, you know, all of their pigs, their any of their
livestock.
Yeah.
And back to the Yule log. That's right. From
the Yule log.
The Yule log, which is one of the most famous and probably more fun things to do.
Right. So tell us, what do we do with the Yule log?
Well, the Yule log is from a Norse tradition, and you know, there's a lot of speculation about the origin of the word. Some folks say.
And I'm not talking about the chocolate covered Yule log here.
No. We're talking about the actual Yule log you burn.
Yeah.
Right. Well,
like when I was a kid, for instance, on TV.
Oh,
you know,
yes.
They had TV when I was a kid.
That's right.
And there'd be this like Yule log that would be on TV.
Like WPIX.
Was that WPIX
it
in
was.
New York? Yeah,
it
you
was.
You could like tune it on. It was on 24 hours. It was just a loop, probably.
Yes,
of,
exactly.
You know, these logs burning. Anyway, that
and
was the Yule
log. If
you lived
in a crummy little apartment in New York City, you
that's
were
what
glad
you
to have it.
Yeah. And everybody huddled around the TV to stay warm. But anyway, I don't know if they still do that, but I remember that from when I was a kid. Anyway, go ahead with the Yule log.
Well, a traditional Yule log would represent the community coming together. They would frequently gather the log that would represent the Yule log. Obviously, if you're burning a fire, you're going to burn more than one log. But there'd be one log in particular that they would dedicate and gather together from in the woods or from a fallen tree. And frequently it's described that they would be singing or other things such as food or community. They might pour libations from alcohol or mead if you're going back thousands of years ago. And when they would burn, they would wait till the winter solstice, and a lot of cultures dimmed all the lights and put out the hearth and then reignited it, because that would be symbolic to bringing back the sun, bringing back to light. And
so this was the first log that you would actually relight it with.
Now, in our family,
I want to talk about the Yule log.
Yeah, I'm still there.
Oh, you are good.
Yeah. In our family, we take a cinder from last year's Yule log to start this year's.
Right. That's common. And it's tied to blessing the home, protecting the home, and protecting the future crops to come in the spring.
Right.
Some cultures burned one log for 12 hours. Right. Some cultures burn the same log a little bit every day for 12 days. It depends on the culture. And you have to bear in mind that these were oral traditions. So nowadays, you know, you're digging back into finding songs and chants and trying to piece together. It's really reconstruction. We don't really have the accurate
information. And some also used different types of wood also. Some used one particular wood for the Yule log and other different types of wood to put on top of it as a ritual for protection or whatever they wanted for the coming year.
And was there some tradition of dragging the Yule log through the village or something like that?
With singing and community.
Yeah, kind of celebrating the spirit of the tree and the log.
That was more of a Slavic tradition.
Yeah. Well, I did that one time a few years ago.
It was probably a lot of fun.
We went out and we all took turns dragging it through the snow and all around the yard and around the house and through the house. And yeah, it was fun.
And when you were a kid in Jersey, did you play the WPIX Yule log on television for 24 hours?
Well, I don't know if 24 hours, but you
could
know,
you
I
play
remember.
That every day of the year or just on the winter
no,
solstice?
No, it was just, I think it was just, you know.
It's all they watched.
Yeah. No, I think it was, it was a Christmas kind of thing.
It was.
Yeah. I don't think they were celebrating the solstice there in New York.
But so
I think it was a Christmas.
Did you have mistletoe in your house?
We did have mistletoe. Yep.
So
sure.
Another auspicious tradition.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Which is, you know, a parasite.
Yes, but it has no roots. And it stays green in the winter.
Yep.
Well, one of the traditions tied or information tied to the mistletoe is due to the fact that it had no roots and it grew on top of trees, and it grew in trees that had been struck by lightning. Therefore, it was viewed as something that protected the home and people from lightning. So that was part of what imbued its magical powers, as well as being an herb of healing powers. Granted, it is something that borders on, you have to be very careful, and you should consult an herbalist before you do anything with herbs, of course.
Yeah, and the cool thing about mistletoe, when it grows in a pine tree or a fir tree or whatever it grows in, I can't remember.
It's an oak?
Well, at least out west where I've seen it growing, it creates a deformity or a different growth pattern in the tree, which is referred to as a witch's broom. Huh. So the way the tree grows. Anyway.
All right. What other traditions?
Well, everyone knows about the Christmas tree, which is pretty popular and is Germanic.
It's Germanic, yep. And
kill a tree for Christ.
Tannenbaum.
Yeah.
Well, in those times, sacrifices weren't viewed as kill a tree for Christ.
Right.
Going back, it comes from Germanic tribal traditions, and they would be, yes, they'd be sacrificing that particular tree, but the cultures were more closely tied to the earth, and they understood that sacrifices were necessary for new life to come.
And if you sacrificed the tree and brought it into your home, you would also give a sacrifice to the tree, like a libation.
Right.
Uh-huh.
So there was a mutual sacrifice going on.
Reciprocity.
Right.
Yeah.
And Queen Victoria is the person who brought Christmas trees to a lot of popularity because she married Prince Albert. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And his family gifted her family a Christmas tree, and she loved it, and other people in England delighted and loved in it. It was covered with ham glass-blown ornaments. Huh. And then that's how the Christmas tree became very popular in England. And got brought forward in modern times.
How about the wreath? Yeah. Holiday wreath.
I would say that the wreath is really just tied to, along with the tree, but a smaller rendition.
That was more of
evergreen.
A Norse. The Norse brought that in and decorated their indoor area.
Anything associated with a tree that stays green all winter again represents life and the promise of spring, and that even though the world appears to die, it's really just sleeping and regenerating for the new growth that comes. So that's often why evergreens are connected to all the Christmas traditions.
And a wreath is a circle. So
correct.
Life is a circle. So what was I going to say? Glenn, what was I going to say?
Oh, I can't remember.
You guys had an event. You had a solstice event, right? Recently?
We did. We had the amazing enchantress Kellyanna come to our store and lead a Yule chant circle.
So what was that like? Describe that.
Well, she Kellyanne is a local musician.
She's from Wendell.
She is.
Yeah,
and she's most excellent. What she does is she comes 8 times a year to our store and leads chant circles that mark the wheel of the year, and this one was Yule. The songs that she chooses to she teaches chants. Some of them she has written. Some are just traditional chants. She gets everyone in the group singing together. We create a sacred circle together as a community through song and energy. And the chants she picks for each one of the 8 spokes of the wheel would be pertinent to the holiday. So these ones, the songs we sang for our Yule chant circle, had to do with the return of the light, going within, the things that we gather when we have a time of hibernation or slumbering, the growth and the process that comes. And then we move through that sleeping, hibernating time to the light returning. And because we know that come Imbolc, the seeds of intentions that will become our crops in the spring will be generating in the ground, even though we can't see that happening. So Yule is the return of the sun, and then the next time will be Imbolc.
Another question I had is, how is it that so many Christian holidays fall at the same time as ancient pagan holidays?
That was very intentional on the Christians' part to get the pagans to follow Christianity.
And it's a common occurrence. When you have an invading tribe or group of people that come in and take over an area, the best way to get that group to assimilate is to assimilate them. So if you try to just take away what they do and make it something different, you're probably going to meet more resistance than if you allow them to still have most of their traditions but sort of give it a new name or say, well, do it over here, and you can still keep doing your practices, but we're just going to call it this.
And the Christians aren't the only ones to do it. It's happened many times throughout history.
Through all cultures.
Yeah. So let me use me as an example. My name is Glenn, and I'm a recovering Catholic. But, you know, I have to say, the whole time that I was forced to go to a Catholic church and, until I was old enough to be independent, or forced to go to Catholic Sunday school or whatever, I always knew inside that, this was fake, basically. And I was really into, pagan spirituality, woods, whatever. I mean, I didn't know what it was, but I'd rather be in the forest than in a church any day. And, then I come to realize eventually that there is this whole spirituality based on nature and cycles and things like that. And to me, the Catholic Church was just a very, very pale shadow of what was really out there, and it was an attempt to kind of drag in certain parts of nature into, some kind of corporate belief system. But anyway, I don't want to go on and on about my recovering Catholicism except to say that, it's great to realize, I think, that a lot of these traditions have much deeper roots that go, really go way back to a time when people were much more in tune and in touch.
Or connected to the earth.
The natural earth.
Yeah. I mean, our very survival, if you didn't have a grocery store and heat that you could turn on, your very survival was dependent on being connected to the earth. You needed to know when to put the seeds in the ground, when to till the land, when to harvest, when the frost was going to not be coming anymore in the spring, when would it be coming in the fall. Your life depended on that, when to gather wood. And so our ancient peoples did live closer to the land and more connected. And so it would make sense that their spirituality would reflect that connection. And I think with the current times, there's our culture is this mega culture, and there's a real lack of community. And so it's not surprising that people are seeking to return to something that's more earth-centered and more grounded and more connected, because so much is super mega culture and our faith is consumerism, and that rings rather empty. So I think it's natural that a lot of people are gravitating back towards, especially with global warming. And I think we're starting to really get it. We're all in this together. And being connected and aware and making conscious decisions are pretty vital to all our survival. So I think it's a natural cycling back.
So now let me ask, have you ever gone over to the UMass stone circle over there by the stadium?
Yes.
Yeah. So we actually ran Western Mass Pagan Pride Day there. this year.
It's wow. totally a cool place. I don't know if you know all of our listeners, all of our five listeners know about it, but it's...
Tell them where it is.
It's over by the stadium at UMass in a field.
It's south of the stadium.
Yeah. It's, I don't know, what road is that? Amity? That keeps going past university, whatever.
I think
it's
so, yeah.
Those storage buildings.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, it is so cool. It's just this big circle of standing stones. You know, I guess sort of like a Stonehenge kind of a thing. And the stones line up on all the, you know, kind of sacred days of the year, the seasonal high points. And there's usually ceremonies there at sunrise and sunset on the big
solstices
yeah. and equinoxes and the cross-quarter days and stuff. It's a great place to go. There'd be, you know, 100 people there or something like that on one of those events. And the woman who runs it, is it Judith Young?
Does she have spirals?
Not sure. No.
I don't know. She's a geology professor at UMass.
Yeah, it's the professor.
And at UMass, there is Spirals, which is the pagan group.
It's the student group.
Student pagans.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just great. So anyway, that's a cool thing to do.
You know, getting back, though, to the Christians and the pagans, it disturbs me that like the institutional church, you know, not only misappropriated pagan beliefs, but they destroyed the record. And
well, it's an oral tradition. Anytime something's an oral, it's akin to, like, not to upset anybody and say it's the same to the American Indians, but when any of you have an oral tradition, it's harder to keep the record alive because it's an oral tradition. So you kill off the people, you kill off the record.
Right, but there were destroyed, you know, libraries were destroyed and written records were destroyed. So a lot of the belief systems are sketchy and so it's hard to get the information.
Well, the Christians didn't only, you know, do it to the pagans. Even the Egyptians did it to themselves. I mean, when you take over your own group, you know, look at when the Egyptians took over, you know, their own group and changed from a polytheistic group to a monotheistic group. They destroyed their own records of themselves.
True. And a lot of pagans who turned to Christianity and ended up in the same position, sort of working for the man, so to speak.
Yeah.
Well, I think what you
that's
see
classic.
What you see happening now is the word neo-pagan coming
right.
up.
Yeah.
Because pagan is a large umbrella, and there's a lot of faiths that come under that,
right.
from Druids to Asatru to Wicca.
Reconstructionists.
Right, correct. So Reconstructionists tend to be the folks that work to research and find as much documentation as possible and do as much as possible try to resurrect possibly how things were done. A lot of modern pagans accept and understand that it was oral tradition, and there's a lot of information that's been lost. And what they work to do is to create a living faith that's earth-centered and pagan-derived, but it's new. It is. Paganism is what it is now. It's a living, earth-centered spirituality that's coming a lot. It's a reflection of the times and the culture, and that is really what all religion is. It's a reflection of the people and their faith. So, yeah, some of the accurate records lost, but I see plenty of people finding their own way and creating their own new, wonderful traditions that are very valid.
So how do you find out who some of these Reconstructionists are?
Some of the more Reconstructionist faiths, I would say, and I'm not studied in Asatru or Druidism, but there's Reconstructionist Druids, Asatru, and I think a Celtic path as
yeah.
well, but that's not my field of knowledge, because I can't answer in-depth questions
yeah.
on it.
Right.
And I know a lot of Reconstructionist Celts are looking towards the Hindus, because they are the only living polytheistic group to keep their faith and not be destroyed.
Huh.
So they're reading their texts and seeing what they've done and going from their rituals and going back and trying to reconstruct Celtic faith from a Hindu standpoint.
Did that answer your question?
Pretty much. So, but listeners that want to learn more about paganism and the things we're talking about, where can you refer them to?
I personally think Witchvox is a really great website.
Huh.
It's witchvox.com, WITCHVOX.com.
That's actually one of my favorite websites as well.
There's also pagantimes.com. It often references really great authors and books. There's plenty of groups in the area doing stuff. You can come to Awantry, where we do all kinds of wonderful events.
Where is that?
Yeah, tell folks about that.
We're located on Cottage Street in East Hampton. Kellyanna comes and does the Wheel of the Year chant circles. Uh-huh. We do many things from drumming to Reiki shares to tarot play groups. There's a lot of great folks that come through Awantry, and we have resource sheets for people looking for more. Other groups in the area is...
Do you have like some kind of calendar on a website?
On the website.
Something?
Yep, and our website is www.awentree.com.
How would you spell that?
Awentree is Awentree.
Uh-huh.
There's some other groups in the area. There's Earth Spirit. They do a public open winter solstice and summer solstice. Does
yep.
Earth Spirit do?
They also do... what's that one coming up?
Where are they
Feast
located?
Of Lights.
Feast of Lights is coming up.
Earth Spirit's located in Western Mass. I'm not going to be able to say the town correctly. It's a little bit west of here. Huh. Chesterfield, Cummington, not quite sure.
Yeah, I'm not
town.
Sure.
But they are doing Feast of Lights at the Clarion in Northampton.
Uh-huh.
And it's earthspirit.org.
Right.
So speaking of like moving toward the lights, I know we're talking about solstice, but can we just... briefly talk about Beltane and how we're all going to get naked and cavort around a bonfire and fertilize the orchards and things like that.
Is this your bonfire you're having?
I don't know. I'm just wondering, is that something that we can look forward to?
Let's go.
The Beltane fires.
Do we always have to bring out the naked comments with the pagans? Is this a reputation the pagans seem to have wherever they
no,
go?
No, that's just my personal preference. when is that coming up?
Beltane would be traditionally celebrated. Most people, you can mark it May 1st. In Celtic traditions, they would have started the night before, so it would be the last day of April into May 1st.
Okay.
But also
good.
Bear in mind that we have assigned all these holidays set dates. Back in ancient times, they would have, because these holidays marked things like the first lambing of lambs being born or the first green growth, you know, these dates would have slid a little bit to mark what was like. You can't bring down the wheat for Lammas or Lunasa in August if the wheat
right,
isn't
now
ready
with,
to come down.
With
so.
Global warming, things are happening a lot earlier than
very
they used to.
Changes.
Yeah, buds are popping open way early. And
you have an event coming up.
Yes, the last Tuesday of every month is Tarot Playgroup, and so December 30th is our next one, 7 to 8:30. There is a small charge.
And coming up way in the future, next September 13th is Western Mass Pagan Pride Day.
All right.
And that's going to be at North Star School.
It's a free event, and for people looking to learn more, it's a great event.
It's
to
a great
to.
Event.
Yeah, I didn't find out about it until after it was over.
And you can find out more about that at wmppd.org.
Great. Well, thanks so much.
Thanks for having
Thank
us.
Thank you.
It was our pleasure. And now we have our own quoting ourselves here.
This is a special solstice event here on the Enviro Show. We're going to do some spoken word.
Yes.
And I'm going to do a little background music for Dio. This is something you wrote.
This is Return of the Sun God. Attention dreamers, blasphemers, and schemers. There's a blue light special in the seventh aisle. There's a good chance the second coming came and went. That Jesus got whacked by the FBI. That the Antichrist is really a head of state tempting fate. That the rapture lost stature. The saved are actually lost, sinking daily into dull cardboard boxes. Full of single old gloves and soiled eyeglass cases. There's a good chance none of that matters, that the lark will sing regardless who listens. The fly or flea will bite both sinner and savior. That the laws of physics will remain the same, and believers will believe in unbelievable tales of things they've never seen. Come millions of years, when your God is history, the sun will expand beyond any command and toast every marshmallow in sight. The stars have no interest in investments or vestments. Quarterly reports are mere fuel for the fire. So the liar, the broker, the barker, the joker are all in the dustbin together forever. Amen. All right, moving on.
Nice.
It's time for the Bust Up Billboard. Oh, we have lots of time. Why don't you guys announce that event again you got coming up?
The Tarot Play Group?
Yeah.
We have a couple things. We also have Kirtan. That's a new event we've just added.
And what is Kirtan?
Kirtan, in a nutshell, is sound yoga. It is chanting that's in Sanskrit. It's call and response chanting.
And who is there someone who leads that?
Correct. Karen Powers and John Wallman are leading Kirtan bi-monthly at Awantree. And it's the second and last Wednesday of every month from 7 to 9. There is a small charge. And that's really exciting. We're very excited to have Kirtan at our store. And the other thing we have going on is the Tarot Play Group, the last Tuesday of every month, 7 to 8:30. The next one is December 30th, Tuesday night.
Excellent. And Saturday, January 17th, all day. Join the Northeast Organic Farming Association for the 22nd Annual Winter Conference, Organic Farming, the Roots of a Sustainable Community. The conference this year will be held at Worcester Vocational Tech High School in Worcester from 9 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Pre-registration is now open. For more info, visit NOFA/MASS website. Or contact conference coordinator Jassy Bratko at 978-928-5646. On Saturday, January 10, Washington, D.C., maybe close by, Keep Winter Cold, Polar Bear Plunge. Last year they did it at Puffer's Pond in Amherst, but I don't see that up on the website yet. We chose this date, this is from the organizers, we chose this date because the newly elected U.S. Congress will be returning to Capitol Hill around this time, and the new president will be inaugurated 10 days later. Our plunges into cold bodies of water will say loud and clear, cold bodies of water. We'll say loud and clear that our state and national government leaders, it's time for strong action now. Information, www.keepwintercold.org. And then finally, January 9th through the 11th, please join us at our annual Winter Retreat for Earth Lovers to be held at Earthlands in Petersham, Massachusetts, just east of here. Take some time to reflect in the depths of winter while connecting with the natural world and with one another. Spaces are limited, so sign up soon. Please see our website for a retreat flyer with details and registration information. And go to sacredearthnetwork.org/updates. All right, so it's... Oh, we have some time here. Shall we go?
We didn't talk about the... I can fade this out.
The monkey wrench?
My favorite accent. Topic. We didn't talk at all about the...
The Utah activist.
The Utah monkey wrenching, yeah.
If you heard Democracy Now!
Excellent interview with Amy Goodman yesterday on Democracy Now!
It's Tim DeChristopher, 27-year-old University Utah economics student. Said he had accomplished his goal of disrupting the auction. Sort of.
This was an auction of what? How many acres?
Let me see if I got a number here.
Yeah.
116 parcels totaling 148,000. Yeah. 100,000 acres.
150,000 acres in southern Utah.
Yes.
Yeah.
To oil drilling.
Surrounding all kinds of national parks and areas like that.
Like Arches.
Yeah.
For instance.
You know, and a lot of famous areas that the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance has been fighting for years, for 20 years probably,
yeah,
trying to protect a lot of these areas. And in the last days of the Bush-Cheney regime, they're auctioning off the whole area for oil and gas leases.
Yes.
And so this guy,
Tim
DeChristopher.
Yeah.
gets into the auction and
starts bidding up
just
everything.
Just bids on everything he can, and eventually
the prices go sky high.
He himself acquires 22,000, 21,000 acres of these leases until they finally stop the auction and haul him out of there. But he had bid up quite a few of the other parcels, they said, by about $500,000 or something like that. And his total was $1.8 million that he bid up. And the good news is, and we love the good news on this show, the good news is that all those parcels that he bid on won't be able to be re-auctioned for at least 30 days, I think they said, which gets us past the Bush-Cheney disaster.
Debacle.
Yeah. So, excellent job. The guy, I think, should have a job at the Department of Interior, maybe at the top. What a great thing to do. I mean, in one, you know, whatever, however long it took him, one afternoon to save 22,000 acres. It makes me drool. So,
it's a good
amazing.
Thing. Go.
Good job.
So, yeah, if you want to check out that interview, which is really exciting.
Yeah, go to the Democracy Now! Website for Monday. It was a great interview. Very eloquent guy.
All right. That's good work. Next up is Antidote Radio.
And, you know, we'll be back next year.
We will.
Right? We're not going to be here again. So
Farm to Fork will be back next week. This time.
We'll be back on the 6th, I think.
Next year at this time.
Next year, yeah.
And if you... you know, there were some things we didn't get to, so check out our blog. Just Google In the Enviro Show and click on the links.
All right, and we're going to go out with a tune.
What is that tune?
It's The Holidays Are Here and We're Still at War.
That's right.
What a surprise, huh?
It's by Brett. What's his last name?
I don't know.
Or her last name.
Brett Denon.
Denon.
Yeah. Yep, so here we go.
All and right,
we'll
adios.
We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Happy holidays.
Happy solstice, everyone.
Children in the parking lot, arteries clogged with blood clots, pushing through the aisles of department stores. Neon crosses and Christmas lights, credit card debts and brand new bikes. The holidays are here and we're still at war. The rabbi reads from the testament, the banker gazes at the year's investment, salvation Santa solicit for the poor. Deception of democracy, the philanderings of faux foreign policy, the holidays are here and we're still at war. Smoggy skies and fixed elections, injustice strikes from all directions, people with their backs against the floor, looking for someone to set us free, a king with fists like Muhammad Ali. The holidays are here and we're still at war. Mother knows what is best for you, even though it's hard to listen. Your father knows he can count on you, though you couldn't count on him. Christopher Columbus knew, Vasco da Gama and Magellan too, the prophets of oppression grow like never before. All hail to the capitalist thief, bemoan your lost ones and cover our grief. The holidays are here and we're still at war. Hurricane waters ravage southern towns, and black and brown people are left to drown, while the White House and the Emergency Management Agency ignores. Victims seek shelter in the Astrodome, and the National Guard says don't go home. The holidays are here and we're still at war. Police officers hassle the homeless, domestic disputes, alcohol and violence, a jailhouse
opens wide its door. A corporation cuts 1 million employees and the factory is moving overseas. The holidays are here and we're still at war. Our mother knows what is best for you. Even though it's hard to listen, your father knows he can count on you. Though you couldn't count on him, Jesus sheds another tear into a sea of 2,000 years, into the eve of a new year once more. Tears of joy, resolution, sorrow, toast to health and wealth to tomorrow. The holidays are here and we're still at war. Religious wars and domination, world trade and globalization, the prices of petroleum soar. Lonesome churches are packed with sinners, non-believers and new beginners. The holidays are here and we're still at war. Say a prayer for the less fortunate, prisoners and soldiers you never have met. Understand what it is they're fighting for. Say a prayer for your enemies. Say a prayer for the victims and their families. The holidays are here and we're still at war. Yes, the holidays are here and we're still at war.